your arm. Reluctantly, Jamie rolled up his sleeve. As she wrapped the pressure cuff around his arm, Jamie applied one of the temperature sensing patches to his own forehead. "The question is," she said, almost to herself, "do the Lycan represent the best that Mars can do? Or are they the survivors of more complex life forms that have become extinct?" Jamie leaned his rump against the edge of the workbench as she read off the digital display of his blood pressure. "Maybe that rock formation really was a village?" he asked. "We have not seen any other evidence for intelligent life, Jamie. I am merely suggesting there's that face carved on a rock up in the Sedalia region." "Oh, James, surely you don't believe that?" he shrugged. "Now that we know that there's life on Mars, who knows what to believe?" "But there were once intelligent Martians?" She was reaching for a fresh hypo. Looking away from the glinting needle, Jamie said, "The planet's had billions of years, time enough for intelligence to evolve, and then get wiped out when the climate changed." Joanna shook her head as she tied the rubber tubing above Jamie's elbow. "But there is no evidence, no remains of civilization, no ruins. All covered up by the dust storms." He pumped up his arm. "Except for my village up there in the cliff. Maybe there are more..." "Ouch!" "I'm sorry." She had missed his vein. It took her 3 tries before she got blood. Jamie said, "This changes everything for you, doesn't it?"
"What do you mean?"
"Finding life. You're a famous woman now. You'll be more famous than your father." She blinked several times.
"I had not thought about that. Once we get back..."
"You won't be able to settle into normal lives after all. At least you won't."
"Nor you," Joanna said.
"If it had not been for you, we would never have gotten here." "You fulfilled your father's greatest expectations," Jamie said, as gently as he knew how. "You don't have to be afraid of him anymore."
"I am not afraid of my father."
"I mean, he'll have to let go of you now." She looked into his face for a long moment, troubled, uncertain.
"I will have to let go of him too, then."
"Yes." Jamie nodded, even though it hurt his head. Neither of them smiled. Ilona and Connors took their turn in the lab module together, while Joanna went to the lavatory and prepared for bed. Jamie, too restless even to think about sleep, made his way up to the cockpit. The storm shrilled continuously outside, making the night blacker than any he had yet experienced on Mars. He peeked through the thermal shroud, saw that there was nothing to see, then let it snap back into place. He felt no fear of the billowing dust racing past. To Jamie, it was more like soft, cottony clouds enwrapping them. He had no sense of gritty sand particles that could scratch and grind metal. "I could walk out there if I had to, even at the height of this storm," he told himself. "It might even be fun." "When will it end?" he asked himself. "Maybe I should call Toshima and ask for his forecast." Then he thought, "Why bother? It'll end when it ends, no matter what the meteorologist says." Fingering the comforting, smooth stone of a bear fetish in his pocket, Jamie told himself it was foolish to try to press things, especially when you have no power over them. Wait out the storm. Wait out all the storms. He felt tired, utterly tired, yet too keyed up to crawl into his bunk, like a kid the night before Christmas. So damn tired he can barely keep his eyes open, yet too excited to go to sleep. Connors and Ilona are spending a long time in the lab. Is she up to her old tricks again? Well, if Pete can get it up when he feels as bad as he looks, then more credit to him. And Ilona, he almost laughed, she's like the good old post office. Neither rain, nor storm, nor dark of night will stop her. He rubbed a hand across his bristly chin. Maybe I ought to shave. If we get the antenna fixed and we're on TV tomorrow, I ought at least to try to look respectable. On the other hand, maybe I'll look worse shaved than with a 4-day growth. Maybe. Lee won't want the media to know we're sick. Kumada must know about his daughter and the rest of us, but we sure as hell don't want the media to pick up on it. They'll go nuts. Martian fever. Everything we've accomplished will get buried the instant they suspect one of us has so much as the sniffles. He realized that there are people on Earth who would be afraid of any Martian life. The idea of life on other worlds destroyed their comforting self-esteem, attacked their religious beliefs, shattered their view of the universe. Or worse. The UFO nuts must be going crazy. They'll be expecting a Martian invasion, at the very least. The thought startled Jamie, saddened him beyond measure. Absently, his mind churning, Jamie leaned across the control panel and turned on the rover's headlamps. Peeking through the thermal shroud again, he saw a softly diffused grayish light that revealed nothing, just a dimensionless glow like a thick, billowing fog. The Martian wind sang its endless song, although he thought it sounded a tone deeper than before. Is that good news or bad, he wondered. They're going to make us turn back tomorrow, he knew, without getting near the cliff village. They're going to say we're too sick to go on and make us head back for the dome. Jamie knew that it was the right thing to do. Four lives depended on it. Yet, as he peered out at the pearly gray clouds wafting past the rover's canopy, he wondered if there was some way he could get them to agree to pushing forward instead of retreating. I could walk it, he thought. I could walk there from here and get to see it, climb up the cliff and put my hands on it. I could do it. And then die. There's no way to get back again. The suit can't keep you alive for that long. But I could at least get there and see it for myself. It wouldn't be a bad place to die. Maybe that's the meaning of my dream. Tony Reed could not sleep either. He had retired to his cubicle, of course, as had the seven others living in the dome when the lights had automatically dimmed for the night. Voznesensky insisted on keeping exactly to the mission schedule, except for dire emergencies, and Mikhail Andreevich was becoming more of a stickler than ever, grouchy and brooding as the illness took hold of him. As soon as he heard the Russian's deep snoring, like a farm tractor rumbling back and forth, Reed got up from his bunk and tiptoed in his bulky slipper socks back to his infirmary. The dome felt cold in the darkness. Reed dared not turn on the overhead lights as he padded past the silent workstations. He reached the infirmary and, sliding its door shut, groped around his desk to his chair and reached for his desktop computer as he sat down. He found its power switch by touch and turned it on. The little screen glowed orange like a cheery fire. They're dying, Reed knew. They're all dying, and they're looking to me to save them. And I don't know what to do. He scrolled through the data from the latest medical checks. Nothing new. Nothing he could see that offered the slightest clue as to what might be infecting them. Tony shook his head as he stared at the screen. He himself felt fine. A bit tired, eyes burning from overwork, but otherwise fine. None of the symptoms the others had. How can that be? He asked himself. We all eat the same foods, breathe the same air, yet they're all sick, every one of them, in the rover and here in the dome, and I'm not. Leaning back in his spindly plastic chair, Reed half-closed his eyes and steepled his long fingers on his chest. Think, man, he snarled to himself. Use the brain up there inside your skull and think. Proposition one. Both the team and the rover and the crew here in the dome have come down with it, whatever it is. Therefore, it cannot be an infection from the life forms that the rover team has found. Yes, true. But can it be an infectious organism in the air? Even though theory says Martian parasites could not possibly attack visitors from another planet, might there be some sort of highly adaptable virus in the air? We know that there is life on Mars. What if there are organisms floating in the air? Reed shook his head, trying to dismiss the idea. We've sampled the air. Monique has tested it with every piece of equipment she has. Voznesensky has checked the air purifiers. They found nothing. And the air in here is Earth normal, not Martian. Any Martian organisms would be killed by the high levels of oxygen. And yet, we don't have an electron microscope. A virus could slip past Monique's tests, especially since we don't know exactly what to look for. Maybe they like oxygen. And we aren't consistent. We're very careful not to contaminate Martian soil or air samples with our bugs, aren't we? If the bigwigs actually believed their theory, why would they worry that we might possibly infect Mars? It just doesn't make any sense, Reed told himself. If it's a native Martian organism infecting us, why haven't I been infected? Why am I healthy while all the others are dying? For the first time he could remember, Tony Reed felt guilty and inadequate. He also felt terribly afraid. But that was an emotion he had experienced all his life. Dr. Yang Mei-Lin slept, but not well. She was troubled by a dream, a nightmare. She was an intern once again in her native city of Wuxi. The Great Famine had the entire province in its grip. The streets were so littered with the dead that people wore perfumed gauze masks to keep the stench of decaying